show, Mark.
Glad to be on. Very much appreciate it.
So, Mark, it's a pleasure to have you here. Now that you know that I know how to read out loud directly from your website.
Good work.
Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, such as like how you got from Berkeley to Eugene, Oregon, and perhaps switching gears and careers, if you will, from gaming to creating and designing vehicles, that kind of thing. So our listeners who may not have heard about Archimoto might know a little bit more about you.
Well, so to answer the questions in order, actually I'm from Eugene originally. I was born here, grew up, went to South Eugene High School, and then went off to Berkeley for school. But there was a game company in town called Dynamics that eventually became part of one of the major gaming publishing labels. And after college, I moved back in order to go work for them, and worked in as a professional game developer for about 6 years before splitting off with a few other guys to start a company called Garage Games. And that's sort of the where I'm from. In terms of how to get involved in Archimoto, what happened is we sold Garage Games in 2007, and I came at vehicles mostly as a consumer. I've certainly always been an electric vehicle enthusiast. I actually spent some time during college working for General Motors. But when we sold Garage Games, I went looking for what I considered to be a reasonable solution for transporting myself around town, and the marketplace had nothing to offer me. So that began in combination with a couple other factors. One, I saw a kit vehicle called the Bug E that was actually designed not far from here at all in Creswell, Oregon. And it really, seeing that vehicle after spending months and months scouring the web and every local EV outlet for a vehicle I could reasonably drive, that's the combination of those factors is what got me engaged in the project in the first place. So I got one of those kits and corralled some friends into helping to put it together. And after experimenting around for a couple of months, incorporated a new company where we started from scratch and made our own vehicle.
That is simply amazing story you have. Well, Pam?
Okay, Mark, this is Pam. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Pam, and I'm here in California. We're up by Hearst Castle, where today it is very, very hot, and we have a lot of problems with we have oak trees all around. So if my voice goes in and out, it's because my asthma's kicking in. So I hope that you'll be able to hear my questions clearly. Now, about the cars, you have five models, right? The Archimoto Pulse, and you have five different
Yeah, we've built five generations of prototypes. So from our very first, when we began, we knew from the outset we were going after a three-wheeled electric vehicle. But in terms of its actual characteristics and ride experience, all that was still to be determined. So we've built five generations, and along the way, refined the plan, refined the design, refined the capabilities to go from what was essentially a very homebrew start to a finished, professionally engineered, designed, and tested vehicle product.
So can you tell us about the Pulse? Can you tell us a little bit of information about the Pulse?
Pulse is our Generation 3 prototype.
Okay.
It's the blue one in our photo galleries. The Pulse was actually constructed off of our own chassis, and then we took a total Toyota Yaris and sort of squished it together and built our own metalwork and bodywork for the tail section. And that was really our first concept car. So you think about all the concept cars that get shown by major auto manufacturers, the Pulse was our first concept vehicle. And that's, we used it to both launch the company and the brand into more public awareness, and then also to begin to gauge potential customer reaction to a pretty novel vehicle concept that is a tandem three-wheeled EV designed for everyday driving.
So Cheryl and I are consumers. So if we walked in, you know, we came to visit you at Arkimoto there in Eugene, Oregon, and we walked through the doors, as a consumer, what would be the best way to describe your cars to us, your vehicle, the standout points of interest? What would help us want to buy that car?
So it's a, I think, a, there are, depending on how you're looking at the space, you'll come up with a few different reasons why. One, at the outset, it's just a really fun driving experience. The actual SRK product that we're building has a partially shelled frame that you can then add full enclosure to. But the basic experience, you're situated in the center of a lightweight, very nimble, very fun electric vehicle that handles something like a small sports car. So from a drive experience standpoint, it's very fun. From a practical mobility standpoint, it's very appropriate for the kind of typical driving everybody does every day. So if you stand on a busy street corner and you watch all the cars go by, what you'll see over and over again is one person and a full-size car. And that one person could be going a couple miles to the grocery store to get a gallon of milk, or going to work, or going to school, or to the gym, or whatever. But the vehicles that we are using for those very simple transportation problems are way out of scope with what we actually use them for. And so the upside of using the Arkimoto is it's actually designed for everyday driving. So for one or two people traveling around town, doing the kind of trips that we all do all the time. So it's first, it's a really fun solution. Second, it's appropriate for the types of trips people take. And then really, to the point of the exercise, is it's appropriate from a sustainability perspective. So from in terms of environmental efficiency, both the amount of embodied energy in the vehicle as well as the amount of energy that it consumes rolling down the road is substantially less than a standard car.
Well, you know, I was looking at the comparable. I read an article recently about the top 10 electric car makers. And as compared to all the other electric cars, such as like the Nissan Leaf, et cetera, their starting dollar amount, price tag is $32,780. So you definitely have the better price point. And the fun part of your car, for me, just looking at it, seeing all people like Nathan and John and Stana sit in them and get to drive them, and that looks so cool. I've kind of did a crash course reading everything I could find about your company and your product. Of course, last year when Nathan did his bid to try to help crash your website, I did get my little wings.
Succeeded.
I don't remember which. Huh?
He succeeded. He didn't just try. He a couple of tweets from that guy, and all went
boom.
Down.
It burned. But anyway, you definitely have a lot of positive things going, especially starting off with your price point. Granted, it's not as robust and has these huge manufacturers behind your name, but you're coming at it from a perspective that I think is very unique, and I'm very interested in what you're doing.
Well, thanks. Yeah, and I think to that point, it's all about what problem are you trying to solve. If the problem that you're trying to solve is how do I take six people and a bunch of gear 300 miles without refueling, then that's the problem. That's the set of problems that's really handled well by cars, by the mainstream tools that we have for transportation. When you try and solve that problem with batteries and the electric drive, the math gets really challenging. You have an energy storage mechanism, the battery, has only about 1/25th of the energy density of gasoline, and it carries a really high price tag today. So battery cells are still the most expensive component in the vehicle. And I think that when you come at the electric vehicle space and say, we make cars, we need to make an electric car, then that's what you end up with is something that carries a pretty significant price tag and still has a challenge in meeting the sort of full-size car, long-distance range requirements. But that's really not the direction that we approach the space from. We much more said, well, how do people use cars? And can we design a very efficient solution for those same set of uses that's radically more efficient and radically more cost efficient?
Well, you also have the fact that you have to have a certain amount of weight in the vehicle. So if you have two people, how much weight have you guys tried to put in one of the vehicles without it being top heavy or unstable, or is that been worked out by putting like two heavy guys that are say 250 each, so 500 pounds in the car? I mean, different people weigh different weights.
Even with two heavy guys in the vehicle, it's a very stable platform on the road, and that really says more about. It really has a lot to do with the number of cycles of iteration that we've gone through in the design and how we've really placed all of the heavy components of the vehicle to create a very stable, very fun ride experience.
So what about like up hills and stuff? I mean, does with the battery, it still can carry people up and down hills just like the gasoline? As far as weight and climb.
Plenty of get up and go. And you think of it, so in terms of weight, our target for the vehicle itself is 1,700 pounds.
Wow. Compared to the big SUVs and stuff.
Right. So even the Leaf, which is has a pure electric drivetrain, is still about a 3,400 pound car. So you're pushing around in a full size electric car. You're pushing around at least twice, if not three times, the amount of weight that we're pushing in the Arcimoto, which for us means better performance in terms of both energy usage and just acceleration and fun factor and so on.
So for our listeners out there, I've posted on our Facebook, and I also will post out there, I'll give you guys the links tonight for Arcimoto's, for Mark's Twitter, for their Facebook, their website, everywhere you can go, their YouTube channel where you can go and look at these videos. They're posted right now on Stana Talk Radio's Facebook. If you want to go and see these cars and some of the cast from Castle are driving them, and I think some other actors are driving them, and just regular folks like you and me that have test drove these cars, you can go out there and look at those YouTube videos, and also on Mark's website they have some videos and a forum and places, and all the question and answers that you can possibly have over there under their Q&A is perfect for if you want to know anything about this car. But for those of you who don't have time to hit our websites, that's why we're doing this tonight. So we're going to be asking Mark a lot of questions that he's probably been asked a zillion times. Sorry about that. But, so this way to reach people who we catch on the go, and that's why we do Stana Talk Radio, to update the news while people are on the go. Now, your vehicles, they don't use any gasoline, and you're shooting to have a price range of $17,500, plus if you want a different quality battery, another $5,000 to $6,000 on top of that, plus the sales tax and everything. And then you get a tax break, right, from the government? For you
Correct.
For buying this kind of car, so you're looking at maybe $22,500 before a break, and a better battery if you want that. For now, you don't know what it'll finally be. When are you expected to have your cars out there for somebody to walk in a showroom and buy one?
Well,
When's the target date?
We're aiming to be in production next year. There's still a number of factors that make that an imprecise date. But we're going to have our first pilot vehicle on the road this year, and then from there we'll complete our full pilot fleet in the first part of next year, and then make the big push to production.
and you'll be producing those right there in Eugene, Oregon, keeping the money going into your community there. You're going to do the production line there and everything right there in Eugene?
That is the plan. The initial the plan is to produce within the target market region. So one of the other aspects that we're doing now is beginning to reach out to vehicle producers in other market regions for what amounts to sort of syndicated production of the vehicle.
Now, I was reading on your website, this is classified mainly as a motorcycle vehicle, more so than a car. So do you have a driver's license C, or do you need the Class M license, like a motorcycle, to drive these vehicles? Do you know yet?
It varies from state to state. In a lot of states, there is a carve-out for enclosed three-wheeled vehicles that allows you to operate without a motorcycle license or without a helmet if it can pass a roof crush resistance test. In some states, you would still be required to carry an M-class license. But within our initial launch market, that's not going to be an issue at all.
So because of the size, and there is the ability that this is less protection than, say, a big two-ton SUV or whatever ton it is, are these vehicles harder to get insurance for, or do you know even that part yet, or will they be cheaper and less costly for the consumer?
We found it to be the latter, so less expensive to get insurance, no challenge at all really to get vehicles insured at this point.
Now, you live in Eugene, so do you get a lot of snow, black ice? How will these cars perform, say, in the winter compared to spring, summer, and fall? For people wanting to drive these to work in the winter.
So properly stated, we haven't done a significant amount of snow and ice testing yet. We've done some preliminary testing that looked really good.
Good.
But before I make substantial claims, I would want to have a lot more test data. That being said, the vehicle is a front-wheel drive three-wheeler. So, and one of the reasons we chose front-wheel drive was for improved traction and handling in adverse conditions. So where a normal two-wheel drive car, you'd have 50, 55, or 60% of the weight of the vehicle over your drive traction wheels, in this case, mm-hmm. it's more like 70% of the vehicle's weight. On dry pavement, that results in a very stable, very nice handling ride. But like I said, we're going to want to do quite a bit more testing before we make any audacious claims about handling in winter conditions. So I expect those tests to go very well.
Do you drive it every day, or do you drive one? I mean, do you have your own?
not every day. The Generation 4 prototype gets quite a lot of drive on the road. So when the prototype is not down for battery testing or tune-up or so on, we're driving it all the time.
Now, see, for Southern California, where I live, there's very little snow, black ice, get a little bit of fog. We're usually 80 degrees or higher year-round, so it's perfect for my area. Now, Cheryl lives in Kansas, so she would have to have a really tested car for, what do you get, Cheryl? How many inches of snow a year over in Kansas?
I don't know, but I do agree that at a point in time when they do come out with their weather vehicles, I would call it, that you can use in all four environments, because we do get all four here in Kansas. Right now, just something like that, if it were to make it to the Midwest, would only be able to be driven in the nice weather times, like summer and fall, spring, summer, and fall. Obviously, you wouldn't drive it in the winter, or from some of the prototypes, you wouldn't drive it in the rain because you get rained on. But I foresee that something like this is coming. I, for the last 3 days, have read a lot about, around the world, these different electronic car companies.
Yeah, Volkswagen's got one.
Yes. And I mean, they talk in tiny conversations about the simplest things like paint and how much paint on a car weighs and how it weighs down a car. I'm sure your teams have gone in infinitesimal detail as well, Mark, about every aspect of a car. And it's just kind of fascinating when you think about it. I just get in my car right now and go somewhere. I don't think about it. But having you on our show has made me rethink everything about my vehicle. And
go out and study everything, yeah.
But
well, it's funny because you're pushing that paint down the road every time you drive. Every mile that you drive, you're every pound, and this is something that we've been very conscious of from the beginning, is sort of not only is every pound of material in a car particularly, generally some sort of very highly refined, highly energy-intensive, highly earth-intensive process just to make it in the first place, but then it's also something that stays with the vehicle for the life of the vehicle. So it's mass that you have to push around. It's emissions that are happening, whether it's emissions from the vehicle in the case of an internal combustion vehicle, or emissions at the power plant that you're charging from, or emissions and toxicity related to the actual production process. So sort of at a first cut, we just demand less of everything.
And then you have the point of maintenance, right? A lot of these electric cars do not need a lot of maintenance because you're not changing filters, you're not having to fix engines and all this. You mainly have to have a really good guaranteed battery that will be guaranteed for a certain amount of mileage, but you're not in there except maybe doing your... Do you even have windshield wipers on yours?
We do have a windshield wiper.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't have a lot of maintenance.
To your point, you think about an internal combustion engine, you have hundreds of moving parts. You have controlled explosions, potentially thousands per minute, for hundreds of thousands of miles. So that's a high vibration, high temperature, high stress environment for any particular part. I think it's a marvel of modern engineering that cars actually work as well as they do. But you still have a whole catalog of parts within that drivetrain that are going to wear out or become clogged or whatever. In the electric motor, you have one moving part.
So for you guys up there for Archimoto, you won't have to have a bunch of repair shops. You know, people can pretty much, because you would have to have places for people to go to have things repaired when they need repaired.
Correct.
So
we expect, and this is based on experience of other EV makers, we expect substantially lower service requirement than a traditional car would have. So that's what's prompted us to push more for partnership with existing service organizations rather than feeling the necessity that as part of our business model, we have to go out and create a whole service infrastructure.
It's very smart, very smart.
Now, let's talk interior, okay?
Okay.
Does this vehicle, because you're going to, most people will take this locally, to and from work if they live maybe 25 miles round trip from work. Cheryl's 14 minutes or 14 miles from her work. So let's say we're doing short term. We're not going 80 miles round trip or 120. Maybe just if you live in a town like mine, work's like 4 miles away. So I would drive this around. I'd stop at the grocery store, and then I'd maybe stop at the doctor's office or whatnot. Now, does this vehicle have a locked box or storage area so that you could lock things? Because what if you're at the grocery store and you put a couple bags in, then you run by the doctor's, you come out, and your groceries are ripped off?
That's
does it have
be
that?
That's going to be an option for sure.
Okay.
In terms of the base model is only partially shelled, so you'll be able to have a storage box that attaches to the frame. In the case of the fully enclosed models, you have a full enclosure shell that keeps the interior, sort of safe from prying entrance. But in either case, you'll have at least the option of a lockable enclosure.
Yes, because even the big my brother has a Golden Eagle motorcycle, and he has lock boxes on his big giant motorcycle. So I assume they could do that pretty easy on.
Yeah, and there are off-the-shelf solutions for that for sure.
Now,